David Davis and the Warrior River Boys are releasing on June 1st of this year a brand new album, Didn't He Ramble, Songs of Charlie Poole. In the second hour, David Davis is our guest. You're going to learn a lot about David and the Warrior River Boys, and you're going to learn a lot about this great new album, and you're going to learn about Charlie Poole. Fascinating conversation as we talk about that brand new album on Rounder. It's fascinating stuff. He really got deep into Charlie Poole and recognized the influence that he gave to bluegrass and all sorts of music through blues. And every song on the album, there are 14 on the Didn't He Ramble Songs of Charlie Poole, is derived from information that David picked up and learned over about a 10-year period, I think, as he contemplated doing this album. You're going to enjoy it a lot. I'm really happy to welcome, for the first time, to Unreal Bluegrass, David Davis. How are you doing, David?
I'm great, Steve, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm thrilled to death to talk to you. I have here in my hands, and I've been sampling from it the last couple of weeks, the brand new album from, well, it will be released, I guess, to the general public on June 1st, David Davis and the Warrior River Boys, Didn't He Ramble, Songs of Charlie Poole. And I have to tell you, David, Charlie Poole is one of those names that a lot of people connect with at a lot of different levels, and I want you to maybe talk about how you connected and relate that to others. But it's a great collection, and it's neat to hear, you know, not that Charlie Poole didn't write these songs, but these are things he was familiar with and famous for, at least some of them. But this is just really well done. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. We were really excited about the concept from day one, you know, after we got to thinking about it. And, you know, 10 years ago we recorded, or 12 years ago, we recorded Milwaukee Blues on a
record. That's one of my favorite songs. That's something that gets stuck in you?
we thought we had a real good cut on it, and it was, you know, it seemed popular with the listeners, and it became a favorite of ours in our live shows. And you know, along about that time, I was talking with Ken Irwin, and he said, you know, I heard the Milwaukee Blues cut. I really liked what you did with it, the treatment. You should think about doing a whole album of Charlie Poole material, you know. And we were just, you know, running and playing a lot of shows, probably working off of that, supporting that record at the time. And, you know, the thought of doing a whole Charlie Poole album just went, just slipped my mind, you know. And probably 10 years later, I saw Ken in Nashville, and he said, have you thought any more about doing that record, that Charlie Poole record that I mentioned to you 10 years ago?
Well, to the listeners, if you know Ken Irwin, he doesn't forget anything, and he'll circle back around to those things.
I'm glad he did, you know. And he said, have you thought any more about it? I said, truthfully, no, I haven't. But, you know, it's a great concept, you know. So we were going home that night thinking, you know, that is a good idea. And we got to really diving into his material at that point. And you know, I was finding songs like Where the Whippoorwill is Whispering Goodnight, Sweet Sunny South, and songs like that, Goodbye Mary Dear, that was very reminiscent of songs that me and my dad would sing growing up, or songs, the kind of music that he liked. Well, he loved Blue Sky Boys and Monroe Brothers and stuff like that. You know, he was born in 1921, and I grew up singing those kind of songs with him, and I'm thinking, wow, this is just really right up our alley. And, you know, Robert Montgomery is in the band, and really, he helped me produce the record, very instrumental in the groundwork for the record. His knowledge of old-time music and Charlie Poole is more than my own. And he was a great, great help in that respect. And then the rest of the band, you know, we selected the songs, Robert and I, and then the band just dove in, and we worked up arrangements and tried our very best to keep the essence, the rambunctiousness of Poole's music, and the foundational great things about his music there. We tried to keep them there as a foundation, and then build from that and evolve the songs and in our own way, and let it try to be our songs, for that matter. And you know, I think we accomplished that. I think it was real natural. you know, organic, I think they call it.
Yeah.
But it was real natural. You know, it's the kind of music that I grew up on, and you know, some of those brother type duets, sweet duets, I love just as good as High Lonesome Sound, for that matter, you know. And I think the songs evolved just as easy for us as they did from popular songs of the day, Tin Pan Alley songs, blues songs. They evolved easy into Charlie Poole's music. They evolved just as easy into what we were doing. It's great, great material.
It really is, David. And it's there's a couple W.C. Handy tunes on here,
sure.
and which is blues, but it's not the blues that maybe people today think of. This is maybe before Robert Johnson and Muddy Waters.
Yes.
This is, you know what I'm saying. You can explain that better than me because of your musical heritage. But those tunes, the diving, well, I always call it the Diving Duck, but it's actually If the River Was Whiskey. But that's been covered by so many different new blues. So this is the blues before, and I don't know how to describe it except it's a very distinct blues sound that you bring in from Charlie Poole's and make it your own sound, but it's different.
Yeah, you know, as far as the 12-bar blues, black blues, which I dig, you know,
yeah.
I'm into that, but it is different. I think it's more reminiscent of Tin Pan Alley of the Victorian period, the teens, the 20s. You know, he was diving into popular songs of the day, Tin Pan Alley, and maybe more of a New Orleans blues.
You might be right. You might be right. And if I were smart enough to describe the tempo, well, let's say Milwaukee blues. I think that's a good flavor of the tempo of what would have been considered blues then. And so it's not the modern, let's say the 12-bar blues and the guitar-based stuff. It's more of the tempo and maybe the topic that they're singing about. You know, is that what that makes sense?
Exactly, it does, and Beale Street Blues, W.C. Handy coined that song, Beale Street Blues. Charlie Poole called it, when he recorded it, Ramblin' Blues or Tennessee Blues,
yeah.
And we called it Ramblin' Blues on this thing, but it's just talking about Memphis and all the craziness and nightlife and the life of what was happening in Memphis in the 20s versus... Memphis was this guy's favorite place, if any place in the world. It's just a fun song. So Ramblin' Blues and the one you were talking about, I guess If the River Was Whiskey, they were the W.C. Handy songs,
yeah.
The father of the blues.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just a neat, and then you've taken all these. There's some, by the way, there are some great, I love liner notes, David, and there's some great notes in here and great quotes from you. And it goes all the way back to when you were exposed to the Bluegrass Boys and all that tradition with your father. Talk a little bit about that because I want the listeners to get – we're going to talk more about the album for certain and the selections that are on it, but talk a little bit more about David Davis for those who don't know where you're from and what you grew up listening. You've alluded to it a little bit, but let's flesh that out a little bit.
Well, I was born in 1961, and I was born in North Alabama, Cullman, Alabama, and I live here right across the road from where I was raised. So I've been here all my life. My dad, as I said earlier, was born in 1921. His large family, you know, they all played music. His older brother, by 2 years, Cleo Davis, he was Bill Monroe's very first bluegrass boy. He was, when Bill and Charlie broke up in 1938, you know, Bill went to Arkansas, and he got a band together for 6 months, 3 months, whatever, called the Kentuckians. And it was a short-lived thing there in Little Rock. He came through New Orleans, and he was soaking up the music. You know, he was then he came to Birmingham. He came to Atlanta. And my dad's older brother happened to be went back to Atlanta to try to find some work there. You know, it's 1939. He's 19 years old, and the Depression is hard at that point. So, you know, North Alabama, he thought he could fare better in the Atlanta area, maybe find a better job. And some of the kin people told him, I see something in the newspaper here. This guy's looking for hillbilly singers or country singers and guitar player. And he tried out and happened to get the job, you know, and stayed there for a couple of years. And, you know, when he came back, he left September of 1940, moved to Tampa, Florida, and called my dad. My dad got good on a guitar while he was playing with Bill. My uncles had told me when I was a kid that when Cleo came back from Nashville, Dale, that's my daddy, LaDale, was better on a guitar than Cleo. And so Cleo called him to come to Florida, and where he was living down there, and Cleo had learned mandolin. And they was going to go back to Nashville and make it, you know. And they, within a year, they all got drafted, you know, in World War II. And my dad, he lost his right hand, got some shrapnel in his knees and legs, and ended up losing his right hand in 1943. And back when I was a kid, you know, my dad, we never talked about that much, but he said, you know, the first thing I thought about when I saw what kind of shape I was in was, you ain't never going to play that guitar again.
Wow.
And, you know, when I was 8 or 10 years old, I found an old guitar, old black guitar in the back of the closet, and I drug that thing out, you know, and I told my dad, I said, Ted, teach me to play this thing. I want to learn to play this guitar. And, you know, my dad didn't have a right hand, and I'm sure that he thought, now how am I going to show him how to play a guitar? And you saw these big old Mel Bay picks, it's big three-corner picks, huge.
Yeah. Yep.
He cut a couple of ends off of that and taped it to the stump of his right arm, you know, and he got good, you know, on a guitar. I mean, you know, he could play. We played together, you know, and I think he really enjoyed that and taught me to play. And you know, my mother's dad was the turn of the century person. He was born in 1901, and all those grandfathers are here in the community. They all played clawhammer banjo and old-time fiddle. So, you know, I grew up around that kind of music. I grew up around church singing. I learned to sing parts in church when, you know, I could just sing and everybody else would drown you out, you know, the congregation. So it wouldn't matter if you were singing good or bad, you know. So I learned how to sing parts like that, and my dad taught me that. I was really blessed to be around that kind of music. And if you'll think about it, you think that's old-time music and brother-style duet music, and then pre-bluegrass music, and then classic bluegrass music through an appreciation of Bill Monroe through my uncle, you know, and that brought on Flat and Scruggs, and that brought on the Stanley Brothers. And then, you know, that was the greatest textbook in the world for a person like me. And, you know, after you get a little older, I'm 18 years old by 1979, and, you know, you listen to people like Lynyrd Skynyrd and Allman Brothers and Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I know. You listen to a lot of music. I can tell that from your liner notes, too, but go ahead. I enjoy that part of it.
And, you know, but I'm so thankful. You know, I got to be around old-time musicians playing it right, and I said that's why in my opinion you were alluding to liner notes. One thing we said in that is the future is in the roots.
That is such a great quote.
The future of the music is in the roots of the music. The roots is what keeps the tree alive. You know, without the roots, it's not going to live. And there's more richness, there's more life, there's more vibrance. There's just life and roots. I can dig down into that for the rest of my life, and it's always going to be something to pull out of there. And you know, Bill Monroe said, I've heard Bill Monroe say, you know, the music's in the air. I just was the first one to pull out some of these things. It's all there, you know, and it's your interpretation of it. But I think the future, I think great music, precious music, all comes from roots. You know, how deep a person is in that. It's all about making a soup. And, you know, my ingredients is going to be a little different than yours. and more people might like the taste of your soup than like the taste of mine. So, you know, a number of years ago, I grew up really trying. Bill Monroe was my man, and he is today. I think Bill Monroe is the father of bluegrass music, and there's never been anybody any greater all around than him, in my opinion. I dig him. I'll always feel that way. And we studied Bill Monroe, you know, like a textbook, and wanted to play Bill Monroe's music. And we have become known as traditional artists, and goodness knows we are. But at some point, you know, you need to go back to the well and try to create your own meal, your own soup, and try to be known for that.
Well,
to carve out your own niche, if that's what you're into.
Right.
And you know, bluegrass music is a vibrant music. Bill Monroe, the music that he played attracted a great area of listeners. You know, my point, he appealed to a lot of people.
He did. And he was, and David, I'm talking to David Davis, if you're just tuning in, of the Warrior River Boys. And the reason we got together was to talk about the brand new, soon to be released, Didn't He Ramble, Songs of Charlie Poole. But you make a great point there that there's this sound. And you talk about Bill Monroe. Well, the Everly Brothers live not that far from Rosine, and they were trying to do harmonies like Bill Monroe, and who fashioned themselves after the Everly Brothers, but the very early Beatles.
Yes, sir.
And you know, so it's all connected now.
Yes, sir.
Not only was he the father of bluegrass, but he's and Elvis. I mean, it's ridiculous how much music came from that man. So I don't think anybody would argue with you about him being the father of bluegrass.
I read some time a long time ago a quote by Bob Dylan, and he said if Bill and Charlie Monroe had stopped and right there, just the Monroe brothers, they would have been legends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming from Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
You know, Levon Helm with the band, he said, I saw Bill in the 50s when I was a kid, and it made me want to go home and be a musician. So I got that broom and started playing air guitar with it, you know. So, you know, my point is, virile music, Monroe music, can attract a lot of people. And goodness knows, look at these different people in different genres that took part of that in with the rest of their ingredients to form something with a new face. And see, all that came from roots or prior, but it was another person's interpretation of roots.
And David, it was Bill Monroe's interpretation of New Orleans and Memphis
and
church music that he brought in. So he was doing the same thing that's allowing other people to pick those things and branch out. You're making great points. I think you should. I would be happy to just let you talk for the rest of the show, but because you're filling me in with so much information.
Sometimes I can get on a roll.
No, man.
You know, and I think I've thought more about things like that in the last 2 years than I ever have. And it thrills me. I've been doing a lot of writing in the last couple of years, and you know when you put something down in print, it really makes sense to you, even if it's just been noodling around in your head for years. But when you write it down, it seems like it brings it to a point, and it makes your work simpler, and or your goals, and you know that. What I'm saying right now is what we're doing. It's our goal. It's our thing. We want to go back and look at those roots. Look at the music that Bill Monroe was listening to.
Right.
You know, we've all listened to Bill Monroe's music. We've listened to the Bluegrass Album Band's music. You know.
Yeah.
They were listening to Monroe, but instead of doing that, go back and listen to what Bill Monroe was listening to. And see what kind of stew you can make out of that.
That's great.
And see how the public would dig it or not. You know?
That's great, and you're making perfect sense. And not, I told you before we went on the air that one of my favorite quotes, and you've already embellished on that, is the future's in the roots. Another thing you say in another, and there are great liner notes that help explain so much of this, that you say Charlie Poole might have been nobody disputes as to the point you were making that Bill Monroe is the father of bluegrass. Charlie Poole might have been the grandfather of bluegrass, which I thought that was another great comment.
I think so, and go just a little bit further. I think he's a great candidate for grandfather of bluegrass music. But if you look at different people from how wide of people in their genres have touched on Charlie Poole's music and recorded it or appreciate it, I think a great case can be made for him being the grandfather of a much larger roots-based music.
I think you're right. And when you look down at the lineup on the songs of Charlie Poole, the Didn't He Ramble, the album we're talking about, right in there is White House Blues. Now, if there's a more standard bluegrass tune than that, then you're doing this from Charlie Poole, from the collection of Charlie Poole recordings, and right there is White House Blues. There's so many great themes. Some of these songs, you agree with me, some of these songs have changed names and maybe some words, but when people listen to this album, and they will, there's a lot of things in here they will recognize, but then they'll think, but that's not exactly what I recall it being.
That's exactly the way I felt. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. You know, I'd heard of Can I Sleep in Your Barn Tonight, Mister, all my life, mm-hmm. but I never heard all the verses.
Yeah.
It's a good story.
These things about Frankie and Johnny, but it's not that Frankie and Johnny, but it's sort of related. You know what I mean? One of the songs.
That's right.
So I tell you what, the song, May I Sleep in Your Barn Tonight, Mister, I mean, this is pre-social media, and somehow this guy hooks up with the farmer's wife, and it's all planned out, and sure enough, the next day, there's a letter, and that's it. And I just thought, well, Facebook doesn't even exist yet, and they're already, this was a planned destiny.
You know, I'll tell you, I like all the songs. You know, we went through 80 of Charlie Poole recorded approximately 80 songs in his repertoire from between 1925 and 1930. And we picked the 15 that we wanted to record. But I dig them all. I love them all, and they're great songs, and they flow good on the record. But I think Sweet Sunny South, mm-hmm. when I heard, the first time I ever heard that song was on probably the first Pine Castle recording that the Osborne Brothers did, if you remember, mm-hmm. in the probably the early 90s, and right. I thought it was a super song, and I just love the words in that. It's like Tara and Gone with the Wind and Ashley Wilkes and Moss, and it's like childlike memories, daydreaming. It's just a beautiful song, and you know, I think I am so proud of that cut. I love that song. I think it's beautiful.
I think, David, everyone's going to listen to this, and we've kind of alluded to this already. If they didn't know Charlie Poole's influence, they're going to get it right away. And it's from your reinterpretations of those songs, but they're going to pick up what you picked up and put into the music with the Warrior River Boys. And I don't want to not talk about all of them. You've talked about Robert Montgomery, but let's talk a little bit about the band on the album.
Man, I'll be glad to. They're a band leader's dream. You know, we started traveling in 1984, and we were pretty constant for till about 1993, but very, very little changes. And that enabled the band to have a good kickstart, you know, and by 1989, we had signed with Rounder Records and did two records with them in 80 and 90 and 93, which really gave us a lot of credibility in the business early on as youngsters. Of course, you know, we were early 30s by that time. And the bands, you know, after that, there was a lot of people coming in and out, and the bands was always good. But, you know, this band right here is really a band leader's dream. Marty Hayes has been, he's from Salem, Illinois. And he's been in the band for 23 years.
Uh-huh.
And you know, he knows my vocal inflections and moves better than I do. We've sang together for 23 years. And he's just made my musical life a whole lot easier. A great singer in his own right, great lead singer. You know, we can do a duet two different ways and sell it, whether he's singing tenor, I'm singing tenor, or we're singing lead, whichever one, whatever. And just that constant person there to sing with over a long period of time is very beneficial to a band or a band leader. He's been a blessing, you know. And Robert Montgomery, who I've mentioned earlier, is from here in North Alabama. And I'd met him probably 10 years ago. And Robert he's probably the best all-around entertainer that, I mean, as far as to make you laugh, to do tricks, to play well on four different instruments. You know, he's as good as I've ever seen in my time. And I'm just glad he lives here and a part of our show, you know. But he knows old-time music as good as any 80-year-old man in America, I believe. He studied that since he's just been a small kid. He appreciates and has knowledge of old-time music through the classic bluegrass period, classic country period. He's a real textbook on knowledge of that. And he was just, as I said, his knowledge of Charlie Poole's going into this project was much more than mine. He was great help to this record. And of course, you got Stan Wildman. Now, Stan was a part of our show when we were first with Rounder in the late 80s and early 90s. Great a musician, super musician, super singer, great songwriter. We've done a lot of Stan's songs that he had written, Lonesome Cry of the Whippoorwill, It's Just an Old Body, Willow Valley. Stan contributes 15 different ways, you know, and we go back longer than any of the guys in the band. We go back from the time we was 22 or 3 years old. And Philip James, Philip first started traveling with us in about 2000, and he was 18 years old, and all you'd ever need on a fiddle at 18. And then he got away for 10 or 12 years and been back with us for 3 years, and he was really the icing on the cake. And but I think, you know, these guys, you got four guys there that can sing four parts, can sing three parts. You could record duets and trios, any combination of those guys that you wanted to, and that's amazing.
It is.
You know, to have that. You know, they can play three or four. You know, they can play three instruments and good enough to be on stage.
And David, they're all into the sound of this band.
Yeah. It's really, we're all kind of cut out of the same cloth. And you know, you don't get that. A band leader don't get that. He's lucky to get that in a career. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have great combinations of players, and everybody. You know. But you know, for what I'm wanting to do right now, well, I tell you, for what I want to do the rest of my time in music, ever how long that might be, this would be a band leader's dream. This combination of people, and what's inside them, and you know, they're broad people. They know old time music, they know classic bluegrass music, but they've listened to a lot of different kind of musics, and the broader the palette, the better off you are.
I think you're right. I agree with you 100% on that, and that's what makes this such a neat project, of bringing all these. And again, it's important to emphasize, this is not a tribute album. It's Charlie Poole's songs that you've put together in the band that you have, and it's not a tribute. It's not a knockoff. It's great. They're great interpretations of these things.
Which in itself is a greater tribute.
It is. It is. It is.
And you know, I wouldn't have wanted to try to clone the songs, and that would be really shortchanging ourselves and Charlie Poole's legacy. And if we, you know, we wanted to do it this way, and hope that the listening audience could appreciate what we were doing. You know, the plain fact that I didn't know this at the time, you know, but after we had recorded the record and sent it in to Ken and told him, I said, you know, you remember we were talking about a Charlie Poole record 2 years ago? Well, I got one in the mail to you. And it needs a home, you know, and we do too. And then later I find out that Ken and Marion and Bill, mm-hmm. the three original Rounders,
right.
super dig Charlie Poole and his music, you know, Ken... The fact that he had mentioned that to me and felt like we could give it justice in a way that they could appreciate and did appreciate is very fulfilling to me, you know. And they dug what we were doing.
Well, Ken, that whole group, and Ken has great judgment.
He does. And I'll tell you something else. You know, I've been around him a good bit, you know, the last year and a half. And I remember him from, you know, 25 years ago when we were together. The man is as enthusiastic about music today as he was 25 years ago, and that's so thrilling to me to see that. You know, Jimmy Martin was, wasn't he?
Yes.
You know, Jimmy Martin was. I believe he dug it.
He did.
And, you know, that if it's right, you know, it's supposed to affect you like that.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think so. David, this has been, I've been talking to David Davis. People are going to listen to this album. They're going to love your band. And now they're going to go back and say, Charlie Poole, let me find out more about Charlie Poole. You know that's going to be the effect. Which
it's an interesting
thing.
It's an interesting story. I've done a lot of reading on him, and he was a very interesting character. In 1925, his first recording was Don't Let Your Deal Go Down Blues, May I Sleep in Your Barn Tonight, Mister. That was his first 78. And at that time, 5,000 copies was a successful record. They did 106,000 copies of that one, that first 78.
Man. That's strong.
So, you know, they wasn't that many radios in America.
No.
You know, at that time. So, you know, people was digging that, and it kept a major label until 1930.
That's something. David, I appreciate your time. David Davis, the Warrior River Boys, Didn't He Ramble is the songs of Charlie Poole. I want you, before you leave, tell them about a website where they can find you, do this great music, and where they can pick up this album.
Well, our website is www.daviddavisandwrb.com. daviddavisandwrb.com.
Okay.
And you can get that, you know, through Rounder. You can get it on Amazon and all those places. You can buy it from us, and I'll package it, and we'll sign it. And if you don't like our autograph, we'll put somebody else's name on it. We'll send it to you. But we're really proud of the record. Rounder has worked diligently presenting this record with the best face it could. I couldn't have asked them to done any better. They're into it. They want you, the public, to hear it and appreciate it. And I think you will. I feel that you will, and mostly because of people like yourself, Steve, that's bringing it out to the public. You're the bridge for the record, and I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for your time, David, and I'll catch you somewhere down the road some point, I bet, and I can't wait to meet you in person and see the band and hear some of this stuff.
Now, next time, I want you to do all the talking.
No, let me roll.
I wanted you to.
That's part of the process. I want the people to speak about what they want to talk about, and you did just fine.
Hey, man, you call anytime. If you're down our way, stop in, and we'll bust a watermelon.
All right, brother. Thanks, David. I'll talk to you later. Thanks so much for your time.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.